Great job. God's presence is definitely in the room. It doesn't stop now. Ross is going to come and preach. And why don't you welcome him up as he comes to the front?
Well, that was exciting. You know, the presence of God is so real. It really is. He touches every heart, every soul when you reach out to him. Well, he's fantastic. I think you guys are fantastic as well. Well done. Anyway, I think the band was very good today. It was really good, guys. And Austin is terrific. And it's just wonderful to be here. Amen. You know, the last time I was up here, I preached on real fans. Have we got some real fans in the house tonight?
Yeah.
I said, oh, there's a couple. Have we got real fans?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. At least I know you're here. I can hear you and speak. Amen. Well, I'm going to speak about amazing grace. John Newton was the author of a song, Amazing Grace. And his mother died when he was about 6 years old, and he went to sea with his father. We're going to talk more about that later on. In Ephesians, it says, by grace you are saved through faith in Jesus Christ. Amazing grace is God's idea. He wants to shower us with kindness and grace upon us in Jesus Christ. One of the most popular hymns in English history is called Amazing Grace. When I hear these pipes and drums play the Amazing Grace, it brings tears to my eyes. It really does. For many years, this song has moved the hearts of men and women. This song was written in the 1700s. It's old, but ever new. It's made so much impact in my life. I'm sure that the life of others. I will show you this morning in my serving what amazing grace is real all about. And it can make impact in your lives. We need the amazing grace of God. Deep down in our soul, we need the amazing grace. If you will go to any pub in Adelaide and begin to sing this song, all of the pub will join in with you. If you would turn up in the pub and sing a religious song they didn't know, they would throw things at you. Okay. This amazing, even the drunk in the corner would sing along with you and cry. Why is this song so popular? Why does everybody know this song? And every time it's re-recorded, it goes so popular it goes to the top of the charts. Even if it's sung by Elvis Presley or a pipe, Scottish pipe band, it goes to the top of the charts. Why has this song got so much power over the human soul? You can sing it at a biker's funeral. Everyone would bow down in reverence to this hymn, even if they didn't know the song. Firstly, I believe there's a cry in every soul for amazing grace. There's a cry in every heart for amazing grace. There's something in every heart that would like to believe that amazing grace is possible. Maybe in all my weakness, in all my failings, all my unlikable attitudes, my foolishness, and maybe somehow I could be loved, though I am a human broken soul, even though I don't deserve it. Secondly, everywhere this song is spoken about, God is saying to people, it is true. It is really true. This hymn has captivated the hearts of people. You can sing it in a pub. You can sing it in church. You can sing it at a biker's funeral. That is why I believe God is saying to people, they long for it, and you need the amazing grace. And everyone can be a participate of that grace. It was Jesus who told the story of amazing grace. And he knew people would struggle for it. We need to minister to people to help them find this amazing grace, especially people who find it hard to believe. Jesus is in the town of Capernaum. He saw a tax collector called Matthew. And he was in his booth. Now, the tax collectors and those were hated by the people because the tax collector was employed by the Romans and they had to pay the Romans a certain amount of money. And you could tax people out of existence. They could tax them what they want. So they sat at this table. It was the collectors, the sinners, came down and suddenly there was a knock on the door. They were the Pharisees and all religious scholars of that time. They say, why is this so, you're a cult person from heaven and you associate yourself with this ungodly people? Why is it you say you're a voice from heaven and yet you're prepared to dine with them and eat with them, especially when they're not on the same page as you are? Jesus responded, as is a sick, they require a doctor. You don't understand. I know a guy called Danny McVicar. He was a Scottish evangelist. He's a very good friend of mine. And he would travel the length and breadth of Britain. And I lived in the Midlands at this particular time. And we would follow him wherever he went. He was a terrific evangelist. He went into places where angels tear to dread. I remember once he told me he went into the TAB. And he said, you know, he would say to them, you know the best bet of the day? Jesus Christ. And that's how he started the conversation. And he would talk about Jesus. And there was a guy here called Bob Williams. You know them, Bob Williams. He goes out of his way. He goes to the RSL at Chrissy's Beach. And he plays pool with them. Has a drink, plays pool with them. And he ministers to them. We have to be concerned about the lost. Especially the one who's not here. You don't understand, Jesus says. I'll tell you another story, Jesus said, about 100 sheep. One day, one got lost. Someday, I've got lost somewhere along the line. You think, well, that's not too bad. Win some, lose some. But that's not the heart of a shepherd. Some people don't get it. You might go to Bible studies. You might go to home fellowships. They say, that's pretty good. There's nothing wrong with that. But we should be concerned about the lost, the one that's not here, the one that's not here. You see, when one sinner returns, the heavens rejoices. He would call his friends and neighbors and have a great party and rejoice. In this parable, it helps us understand the importance of the shepherd, the same way we are imported to God. And this parable reminds us that God's love is so strong for each one of us who have gone to great lengths to find the wanderer, the one that is lost, the one that has gone away. You've got to get the heart of the shepherd. There's joy in finding the lost one. When people come to Jesus and find the plan of salvation, is amazing grace. When the pastor spoke a few weeks ago about the lost, I remember I was sitting in the seat there. At the end, we cried together for the lost, for the lost. And I cried because of the opportunities I had missed, personally missed, talking about the lost to someone. Jesus said, I'll tell you another story about a woman who had 10 coins. She had lost it in the house. I wonder why Jesus chose a woman, chose a man, they probably wouldn't believe it. I remember many times I've lost things, shoes, socks. Where's my socks? Where's my phone? I can't find it anywhere. And I can't find it anywhere. Well, anyway, when you find it, she rejoiced. And a couple of weeks ago, actually, my wife lost her wedding ring. And it was 11 o'clock at night, and we could not find it anywhere. I thought, never mind, dear, we'll wake up in the morning, we'll have a great look in the daylight. Well, anyway, I get up in the morning, has a look around the kitchen. I couldn't find it anywhere. I thought, well, maybe it's behind the fridge. So I got the fridge, pulled the fridge out in the alcove, got a blower, blow the stuff out. It wasn't there. I thought, oh my, where could this ring could be? So I pushes the fridge back in. Turns out, well, maybe it's under the dishwasher. So I get dismantled the dishwasher, pulls it out, gets the coin, shh. It wasn't there. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. This thing can't go far. It's got to be somewhere, you know. I thought, well, our house is pretty big, and it's a diner and lounge and kitchen all in a big one. Well, maybe it's under the city. So I went over the city, had a look under the city. It wasn't there. I thought, well, this is crazy. It's got to be somewhere. It's an easy thing to find. Surely it's got to be in this house somewhere. You know, you can't find it. Looked under the cabinet, and I said, oh, well, my wife comes in and says, I just can't find it. I have to go have an appointment. I'll leave it with you. 15 minutes down the track, she said, I found the ring. I found the ring. She rejoiced in that because she found the rings. How much more when Christ, when we find Christ, he rejoices when one sinner returns. Jesus said, I'll tell you another story. About a boy who said, went to his father and says, give me my inheritance. I don't want to live here anymore. I don't want to work for you. I want a real life. I want to enjoy life to the full extent. So his father gave me his inheritance. He left town and squandered it with wine and woman, ended up in a pigsty. He blew it. See, some people would say, well, he deserves it. Let him stay there. Let him rot in that place. Let him rot in that situation. But that's not the heart of a shepherd. Sometimes we have to hit the brick wall and stop and think about what's happening in my life, in your life. He thought to himself, well, maybe living with that was not so bad after all. And if you have grace of a broken heart, I will return to my father and say, sorry, Dad, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. With this in mind, he heads home. Maybe Dad will accept me because I am not worthy enough. He'll probably accept me. If you wonder what father's doing, he might be sitting on the lounge, sitting in the rocking chair, just wondering, doing his odd jobs. But he wasn't. Jesus said his father was at the gate day after day, looking down the road, wondering if it was possible, if this was the day that he would return. Could this be the day my son would return? Jesus said, when he see him, he ran towards him. It's undignified for men to run in those days. He ran towards him, hugged him, and said, oh, welcome home. That's the heart of a father. He runs and hugs them. He runs and hugs people when they disappear from the grace of God. Once he was lost, now he returns with great joy that filled his heart. When one, especially when sinner returns, that's what Jesus is like. When he met his father, he said, well, I'll put a robe on him. You might think, a robe? That robe, yes, that robe. That robe we keep for dignitaries and for special people that come to our house. No, I wouldn't give him that robe. No way in the world he doesn't deserve this. He says, give me that robe. Give me that robe, because I want to distort his dignity. He said, well, the other said, well, put a ring on his finger. Well, the ring speaks of authority. You think, well, something, well, that's not happening. This can't be real. Well, he decided to put a ring on his finger. This guy has deserted you, took a third of your inheritance. I wouldn't trust him. for any kind of authority around here. He could take off any time, high and dry. He could leave you. He doesn't deserve it. He's not worth it to be called your son. Father says, give him his ring. I don't have second-class kids. He thinks he's coming home as a slave. Put some shoes on his feet. Don't let him walk around here with bare feet. Only slaves walk around with bare feet. And he says, well, kill the fatted calf. Kill the fatted calf. Well, I don't think Father thought this through very much. Why don't we call the duck or the hen or something and just have a little party amongst ourselves? But no, he says, kill the fatted calf. Because my boy was dead. And now he's alive. And I want to put a robe on his shoulders because I want to restore his dignity. I put a ring on his finger to restore his authority. I'll put shoes on his feet. I'll repair the community he had in this house. I will kill the fattest calf to restore his joy. For the Lord, joy of the Lord is my strength. That is grace. That's what grace is all about. Jesus knew that brokenhearted people don't even hope for it. You don't understand it. Some religious people don't get it. His big brother comes home. Here's some noise going on, the party going on. People rejoicing. Think, well, maybe my dad's won the cross lotto. Oh, this noise is going on, big party. Wow, see, wow, it's terrific. What's going on? He sees his brother. Oh, not you. The one that deserted, useless here, and whoopee, you have a party, you know. It's terrific. He doesn't deserve all this. He never threw a party for me. How come he gets all the glory? You know, I've never left you. I've done all the work around this place. I milk the cows, I feed the hens, I do everything. And you throw a party for this guy who's useless. You know, he's useless, absolutely useless. And you throw a party for him. I don't understand it. His party, you'll always be with me. And all that I have is yours. And Jesus is saying, all that I have is yours. Enjoy your salvation. Don't walk around as though you've been baptized in lemon juice. Enjoy your salvation. Your brother had nothing. Once he was dead, he was lost, and now he's found. John Newton needed amazing grace. That's what makes this grace, this song, more powerful. John Newton thought how he could write this song about amazing grace. He thought, well, amazing grace, how sweet the sound, it saved a nice guy like me. He couldn't write that because he was not a nice guy. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, how good a gentleman. He couldn't write that because he was no gentleman. And John Newton was how the slaves, how the main men were in those days, that's how he was. And they used to have slaves from Africa to another country. They used to pile them in the boat like sardines. And when they died, in the way, they just chucked them overboard. They used to be there in urine and spewing and everything in the boat. They don't care, they were just there together. Together, it was an awful place. So he was a real sinner. He was a real wretch. He needed saving. Amazing origins found in John Newton's biography. He served in the Royal Navy. John Mao was desperately a soul human beings in the slave trade. He stated in his hymn, he's a wretch, that God found him. The lyrics, based on the experience of God's grace and mercy despite the terrible things that he had done. Once a person accepts God's grace, he can find the joy and a peaceful life. In December 1772, at the age of 47, John Newton began to write the song that would go increasingly popular throughout the years. In this song, John Newton wrote about a grace that is immense. He wrote about how he was saved. It was a powerful tale of redemption of God's grace. By looking at the hymn, we can understand a little about his conversion. There's something about this hymn and song that remains relatable to us Christians everywhere. God's amazing grace is great. He found grace of God, especially on that boat. I remember one time he was saying that, and a story that I read, that one time he was drunk, nearly fell overboard, somebody would pull him back. That was the grace of God in his life. Amazing grace is about God's redemption. Newton wrote the words from personal experience.